We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 9 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're so joyful that you could join us here today. We have another fierce and formidable female joining us. And together we're going to traverse the landscape of higher education this time. So Keisha, please tell us more about today's inspirer.
Absolutely. Today, our guest is Dr. Danelle Whiteside. Danelle is a shero who in her short career has accomplished more than most do in an entire lifetime. Listen to her bio and tell me if you agree. On February 28th, 2021, Dr. Whiteside will end her seven-month tenure as interim president of Austin Peay State University. Her appointment by the APSU Board of Trustees made her the first Black president of the more than 90-year-old institution. Whiteside originally joined the university in 2017 as Austin Peay's general counsel. In the spring of 2019, she was named vice president for legal affairs. And during her career at Austin Peay, she also served as secretary to the Board of Trustees. Prior to her time at APSU, Whiteside served as general attorney for the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights, general counsel for the Tennessee State Board of Education, and district policy advisor for Metropolitan Nashville Public Schools. She was recently named the 2021 40 Under 40 winner by the Nashville Business Journal and was named to the 2020 class of the Millennium Leadership Initiative, MLI, a premier leadership development program of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. In 2019, Whiteside was named to the inaugural cohort of the Tennessee Higher Education Leadership and Innovation Fellows Program. Whiteside received her Juris Doctorate from the University of Arkansas, Fayetteville, with honors, and received her bachelor's degree in Human Development and Family Studies from the University of Arkansas, Pine Bluff, graduating summa cum laude. How about that, Dr. Gibson?
Well, wow, wow, wow. I think I might be speechless. What a great time to celebrate sheroes, especially Dr. Whiteside. Congratulations on all fronts. And a time to really celebrate and recognize women in general as we think about the glass ceiling that's been shattered at the White House, specifically by heels, no less.
Absolutely.
Danelle is clearly one of our personal sheroes in education, and we're so fortunate to explore what we call our M's with Danelle. So in fact, at each podcast, what we do is we explore models of leadership, notice the M there, together by asking our guests what they see in the mirror, in other words, reflections of their self, and who are the mentors that have impacted them. And with this in mind, we'll turn to movements. We should all be watching and getting ready for maverick moments.
Absolutely. I love our M's. And we also like to catch any what we call edubabble that we use or that might be used in our broadcasts, and to make sure that listeners understand exactly what is being said. And I caught one while I was introducing Danelle, and that phrase is millennium leadership. Danelle, can you share with our audience what that phrase means?
Sure. And first of all, thank you for having me. I am very honored to be here and to talk with you, Dr. Gibson, and also Dr. Wright, who I will share later is one of my mentors. So I'm happy to talk about that story. But so MLI is a program, as you said, it's sponsored by the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. And so basically they take leaders who are nominated by the heads of their institutions who have the trajectory to be university presidents, and they are from underrepresented backgrounds. And so they dump them with mentors and all sorts of resources, how to apply strategic visioning, like all these things. And they really saved me because I actually started the program right as I was being named interim president. And so the mentorship that I've had and the resources have really, really helped me and will help me beyond. So I've really been appreciative of that program.
Such a wonderful way of thinking about the work that we can do together. And we're inspired to hear more about the strategic vision and maybe even start off with that word models. Who are some of your role models that have helped serve you in this space? And tell us a little bit about them and why they are your role models.
Well, I mean, when I think about role models, I think about my mom first because she sort of modeled for me how to keep family first. She's very disciplined and structured. And so a lot of the ways that I have discipline and structure, I've taken from her and sort of how you just, how you lead your family, even as a woman in the household and persevere. Like she's inspired me. When I was in law school, my first year, I called her saying I was going to quit and I'm crying. And she's like, no, you are a Walker woman. At the time I was unmarried. You're a Walker woman. And Walker women do not quit. And so she's always just drilled that in me. So she's first. But then second that comes to mind is Michelle Obama. She's fierce. And what I love about her is that she seems to know how to live a robust life. She's obviously a professional woman. She's a great wife, a great mother, but she also seems to know how to make time for herself. Like you would see her sometimes on girls' trips and enjoying, you know, the arts, and just she seemed to have this life that you could say, okay, it seems to represent all the facets of life that I want to have. And so those are the two that I could point to as my role models.
Those are phenomenal role models. And you know, Michelle Obama, I feel you're not the only one that has her kind of on that pedestal, and she was stunning at the inauguration. Oh, I especially appreciated the image of her looking directly into Kamala Harris's eyes. I don't know if you saw that on social media, but it was so amazing. So I can only imagine that Michelle is one of Kamala's mentors too, I think. So who might some of your mentors be?
So I mentioned Dr. Ray, Keisha is one of my mentors. She gave me my first job. And I started working as an intern in her office. Like I didn't have my own office. She let me share an office with her. And I learned so much about K-12 education, about policy. And then I love this story because I actually, once I graduated from law school, I moved back. I was in Arkansas, then I moved back home. And I sent Keisha an email to say, hey, I'm graduating. Just want to say hello. And she's like, hey, the person who, because Keisha had moved to the next, to a new position, and she had hired another person. She said, that person just quit. Do you want to come in here and interview? And I was like, sure. And so she called me. I think I found that I got the job like maybe 2 days or a day before I took the bar exam. And so that was my very first job out of law school. So I just appreciate you for giving me a great start. And even just as a supervisor, she really saw something in me and let me shine. And there, some people are intimidated by that. You have some that don't let you shine. They kind of are intent on tampering you down. But she just said, do what you can do and shine. But she also had very personal conversations with me about marriage and family. So I appreciated that. And then I think about my predecessor, President White, who moved on to be president at Sam Houston State University. And when I got here, first of all, she took a chance on hiring me. She did not know me. I was living in Philadelphia at the time. And when I had the interview, she said, I need somebody who can walk on water. And I said, I'll try. And so she offered me the position. And when I got here, after I had been here for maybe about a year in some of our regular meetings, she said, you have what it takes to be a university president. And I knew in my spirit that that's what I wanted. But she was the first person to like pinpoint and say, this is what you're going to do. And not only did she say that, she said, and I will do everything in my power to get you there. So she started putting me in these leadership programs and really not only being a mentor, but a sponsor. And so she's still someone that I can call. She was very supportive when I took over the interim role. And so I just love her. And then the other person, and I have so many mentors that I could name, but one I'll say is Valerie Harrison. She is a special advisor to the president at Temple University. And so I met her when I moved to Philadelphia. I knew no one when I moved to Philadelphia to work for OCR. And I met her through the director of our office, and she just sort of took me under her wings. And she's the person that I've called consistently when I'm going to make another move, or, you know, if there's a question that I have about my career, because we have a similar path. And so notice that I mentioned all these women, because I really do feel like women have an innate ability to motivate and encourage and inspire, especially me. That's been the case in my career. So I can continue naming, because at every place I've been, there's been a woman to say, you're awesome. Here, I've recognized your gifts, and here's how I'm going to help you. So I just love them.
Shine, you do. And I might have to take over the entire podcast, because Keisha has tears rolling down her face, full of joy. And it's really a testimony to how, as a community of women, this tribe, that we lift one another, mm-hmm. To learn how to listen to our spirit, our whisper, so that we all know how to roar together.
Yep.
Keisha, are we going to be able to bring you back?
Yeah, I'm working on it. It's just so awesome to see someone that in your head, in your mind, you know, they have the potential, and you just see it unfold it literally in front of you. It's just so beautiful to watch. I'm so, so proud. So proud.
Thank you. You're part of my story forever. So I love you.
Yeah, I love you too.
Let's continue with that self-reflection. You mentioned earlier you're a walker woman, and that is part of who you are. And you have this commitment to a robust life. And when you, as a walker woman, look in the mirror, when did you know that, in fact, you were a leader? What did you see in that mirror?
You know, that is a great question, because that has evolved over time. Mm-hmm. And when I was a young child, I was always placed in leadership roles. Like, I was that kid in class that if the teacher had to go use the bathroom, they would say, all right, Danielle is in charge. When I was like five, my grandfather used to put me on the table in front of everyone, say, everybody hush, Danielle's got something to say. And so I've just always been put in the leadership. It's almost like everyone else can see it. And so what I've said over this, over the last few years, it's like sometimes when you have something that everyone else can see and it feels natural to you, you kind of think everyone can do that, and so you discount it. And it's taken me a few recent years to actually see, no, I am a leader. Like, actually look myself in the mirror and like, this is you. Everyone else sees it, and now it's time for you to see it in yourself. And so what I have loved about being in this interim role is that this is the first time I've actually owned it in a way that I have not always done before. So that now when I do look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, no, this is who you are. This is what you're called to do. And so whatever happens from here, wherever I go from here, I have that confidence to know I can do anything and I can lead. And, you know, it's amazing to be in this space now, to actually be able to look at myself in the mirror and say, no, you are a leader. It's not just what everyone else sees. I believe it for myself.
Well, I believe it. And I believe you forever changed the history of not only your university, but what Board of Regents universities look like in our state. And I appreciate that. And your service has impacted the trajectory of Austin Peay forever, for the better. So how else are you seeing women changing the world?
You know, I believe women are amazing. And I have not always recognized the power of womanhood. I think it really didn't happen until I became a mom. That I actually started to see, like, there is some serious power here that we have. And so I think that women change the world by really owning that power, really showing up and doing great work. And what that does is give other women permission to also show up with that same power. And I think it also challenges men to move out of the way and deconstruct those barriers that they sometimes put into place to keep women from really shining. And so I think that that's how the world changes. As women continue to show up and change the world and do great things, other women get permission to do that same thing. That's what I hope that people see when they look at me. It's like, oh, I can do this. I can be a wife. I can be a mom. I can have a robust life and still have a great rewarding career and change people's lives that I am, you know, that I impact or that I come across.
So you show up in so many strong and powerful ways and encourage others in higher education to do so as well. And do you notice any mavericks in this space that we should be watching or even in that larger context, women that perhaps are disturbing the system, and who should others be watching with you?
You know, I pull inspiration from everywhere. And so because I'm a new mom, I have a toddler who's two. And so I went through that whole process of childbirth and nursing and, you know, trying to do all these things, but also having a position of influence and responsibility. So one of the people that I'm watching is Jacinda Ardern. She's New Zealand's prime minister. You know, not only has she kicked COVID's butt in her country, but she has a small child, and she often brings that child to the legislative bodies that she's in. Sometimes she's criticized for it, which is stupid if you ask me, but I think she just shows that you can be empathetic, you can lead very strongly and powerfully, but also be a family person as well. Because sometimes, if you remember Devil Wears Prada with, Meryl Streep, thank you. That's my mama's favorite actress. I can't believe I forgot. But in that, the whole narrative in there is that she was so powerful that she neglected her family. And that is such a misnomer. That's such a falsehood, because there are so many women who get to positions of power and still have families that are intact and children that are successful. And so I just love what Cinda is showing, that you can integrate it all.
And I think she's setting some precedents in other parts of her country too, allowing businesses and companies to be like, oh, okay, well, maybe it's okay for, you know, women to bring their kids to work. Yeah. And speaking of strong parents, I have had the privilege of knowing your father and mother, and I see their influence in shaping the woman that you've become. Your mother in particular, she used to get onto me all the time for neglecting myself, putting too much into my job. And she used to preach to me in a very good way. So what have you learned in your life about taking care of yourself? And you kind of alluded to your mom, you know, kind of her balance with that as well in your intro, but especially with your career and family traveling at the same speed of light, how do you have self-care balance?
Well, I love my mom, and she would preach to you about anything. She's a dietitian, so she certainly preaches to you about what you should and should not put into your mouth and all these other things. But I will say, for me, my mom modeled, take your kids wherever you go. So, you know, my dad was a professor. We were always, if there were any events that she was going to with him, we were always there. I did not always see that my mom put herself first. And so now as a mom myself, I have to balance that, because that's been my model that you just have your kids with you. You don't ever have alone time. You put everything into your kids. And while I appreciate her for that, at knowing, you know, as a woman, a career woman, a wife, and a mom, I'm like, I don't know how she did that, first of all. But secondly, is that sustainable for me? And so there's this whole notion of work-life balance, and I don't believe that is really possible, because it sort of sets up that there's a 50-50 thing, like this is on the scale and it's equal. And so that's never the case, you know, because sometimes my work is demanding more of me. But if like a few weeks ago, my husband called and said Donovan dislocated his elbow, so I had to leave work. I don't care what was going on. And so in that time, my family took tipped the scale. And so I think what I have learned is work-life integration. Something that I learned from her is finding things that I can do to incorporate my life and my life and my work. So for instance, you know, there's a lot of, there haven't been as many in COVID, but, you know, leading a university, there are a lot of evening activities, weekend activities. And so I'm bringing my family. When we have to travel, they're coming with me if I go on conferences. But also, you have to have a lot of support for that. So for instance, my mom comes with us so that, you know, we can all be together. So I just have learned how to integrate a lot of things into my life so that we can all kind of have that time, but I can also focus on work as well. Now, self-care, I think, is another battle. But for me, it starts with giving yourself permission to integrate yourself into your life. Because a lot of times when we think about work-life balance and integration, it's something external to us. It's our husband, it's our children, it's our career. Where are we on that, in that spectrum? And so a lot of times you have to really say, okay, if I'm integrating everything, I've got to give myself a space. So maybe that's, you know, I go to the chiropractor, or I make sure, you know, before I go to bed at night, I journal, you know, whatever I can do to set some time for myself, because I have to integrate myself into my own life. It sounds crazy, but women have a tendency just to forget about what we need and just serve everybody else.
The examples you lift are so powerful in so many spaces. It's either or this percentage. And you've really just embraced this both and, really managing those tensions and really making them have incredible outcomes for you and your family and the way that you integrate the spaces that you believe so deeply in. I'm reminded when you said the Devil Wears Prada, we used to have this thing at our office that was the Prada book at the end of the day with our schedule and what we were going to do. And we always committed to put some type of self-care or nourishment to the soul in that book every day as a gentle reminder. So I thank you for connecting those loves that you have with your mom's passion and just some resources as well. And as we think about the space that you share, we're going to go into a little game of insights. How's that sound?
Okay.
And we will give you some sentence starters, and then we're going to ask you to complete the sentence.
All right.
So here's the first one. Are you ready?
Yep.
An event that changed my worldview.
To me, the first thing that pops in my head is 9/11. I think everyone remembers where they were, what they were doing when 9/11 happened. And I was a senior in high school. I was an office aide, first period. So I was in there. I could watch the TV. So I saw what happened. And so, you know, I remember my very first flight by myself. I was 8 years old and my mom walked me up to the gate. I was going to Milwaukee to visit my great aunt, and not checkpoint. She walked me up to the gate and, you know, gave me to the flight attendant who was assigned to me. And then my great uncle met me at the gate in Milwaukee. So that completely changed, you know, after 9/11. You could not go to the gate. So that was just one thing. But I think what it did for me also was to realize we were vulnerable. And I think up until that point, I just thought nothing could happen. You know, we're a safe country. And so it just kind of shook me to the fact that something can happen. And I think from there, like, I just became obsessed with news. Like, I was watching it 24/7, and I'm still that way today. Like, if there's a disaster that happens, I'm a consumer of news. Like, I just have to see. That's probably not healthy either, if I'm honest, but, you know, that's just the way that it changed me.
Well, so. Speaking of that not being healthy, here's the flip side of that coin. My life improved when I.
My life improved when I gave birth to my son, Donovan. Yeah. Like I said, he's two. And I always tell, a friend of mine just told me she's expecting. I said, you will experience and realize your greatest self now that you're a mom. Like, just my passion and empathy and I feel like my life is just so much better by having him in it. I really do.
Beautiful. So from that strength of motherhood and that truth speaking that you mentioned, share with us a decision that changed your life forever.
Okay, I mentioned living in Philadelphia, so I'll tell you a little bit of backstory. So that is the decision. That is the decision that moving to Philadelphia. So at the time, I was working with the State Board of Education as general counsel, and I was living in Nashville. I had a house that I bought. I was dating someone pretty seriously. I had family and friends around me, and I had always wanted to work for OCR. And I had been applying since law school, but never got these jobs. And so then the posting came open and I applied, and I was one of 7,000 who got the job. And so I talked to my family and friends about moving, and, you know, I had a lot to lose, especially because the person I was dating at the time, long distance relationships never really worked for me. So I was just like, this must mean that it's over. And so he was supportive. He's like, look, we'll have a plan. We'll be together. And so I decided to move. I knew no one, like no one. And so I moved there and really explored the city, made some friends that I still have to this day, strong mentors. My husband, you know, we were dating at the time. He ended up moving. We got married, which was perfect for us because it was just the two of us that really strengthened our marriage just to be there and explore the city together. And, you know, the position that I got next with Austin Peay would not have been possible if I did not work at OCR, because it really gave me that higher ed experience that I didn't have in my resume before. And so it just did so much for me, just to even know that I could live in the city alone. And I remember I talked to Keisha, actually, we went to lunch right before I moved. And she said, you will cry every day, but you will be fine. And she's right. I cried every day for 3 months, but I made it. And so I know that I'm brave and powerful and strong. And part of that is because I had that experience, but also it opened so many doors in my career. And so it was absolutely the right move for me to go there.
Oh my goodness. I do remember that lunch. It was awesome. And I remember the trepidation in your face of like, oh, what should I do? Because you knew it was a pivotal decision. You knew whatever decision you made, it was going to change the direction your entire life was going to go in. It did. Yeah. I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation today. I've learned so much about you.
Yeah. Well, Keisha, I know you know a lot already about Manel, but I think we've peeled back some additional layers today. So as I always ask you before our coaching question, what are some things you're taking away from this conversation? How are you growing as a learner?
Well, I am growing as a learner because I think I'm reflecting on the very sweet things that Danelle said about mentorship. And you never know as a human, the paths that you intersect and how your relationship or how your words or actions influence someone else's trajectory. You never know. And I think it opens up my eyes to be more aware and cognizant, but also more compassionate of when I am having those intersections with people that, you know, I might not need to just rush through something, but spend, you know, a little bit more time. I also really appreciate, Danelle, you leaning into your gifts that everybody saw but you for a period of time, and for you recognizing them and really taking the risk in your very young career, because you got a long career in front of you, my friend. And you took a lot of risk at the beginning to set yourself up for great success. And I think that speaks volumes to our younger listeners who are a part of our podcast family, so that they can be inspired to take those risks early on and not be quite as cautious as, you know, you'd like to be sometimes. So I appreciate that from you so much. So do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience, or perhaps those young girls that I was just talking about, some in college classrooms, somewhere not really knowing, you know, what they want for their future, getting a degree because they were told they needed a degree, but they don't really know what they're going to do with it?
Yeah, that's very
speaking
real.
For a friend.
You know, I will say, I love that you highlighted taking risks, because that is true. Do it while you can, because, you know, the longer you have and the more you acquire, the less risk averse you tend to be. So do it while you can, do it while you have less things to be concerned about. And then I'll say that you get to know and own your gifts. And I think once you get to know and own your gifts and walk those out, your life is going to improve exponentially. There were days in this role where I felt like, I really hope and pray that people get to know what it feels like to be in their purpose, because it is amazing. You go to sleep every night happy, wake up every night happy. Every day is not easy, but when you know and that you're operating in your gifts and in your purpose, it really does energize you each day. So I just really hope that people get to know what that feels like.
Oh, I do too. Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us, sharing your story and your incredible wisdom.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that our listeners are engaged in deep reflection, really living in their purpose, as you said. And to continue that reflection, of course, we have a coaching question. So our coaching question here today is, how might you accept your gifts and be able to give to others? For our listening audience, we always want you to know how much we appreciate you. And to our fierce listeners who will lead with your message of courage, determination, and championing, we're so, so happy to be part of this community together.
Absolutely. And we build this community every week. So please join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight yet another Shero in education. And don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E. And that's where you can also post your response to the coaching question that Frances just gave us. And until then, be fierce and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.